Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
The championship season is over, and what a season it was.
But the best is yet to come. It's the playoffs.
Who will make it to the Premier League?
And who will be left heartbroken at Wembley?
Stay across it all with the second tier.
We're bringing you episodes after every leg.
And in between, we're revisiting the greatest moments in playoff history.
It's real conversation with two real championship obsessives.
So you can be in the know about everything happening in the playoffs.
And share all your new knowledge in the pub with your mates.
So come join us.
We're your one-stop shop for the playoffs.
Search second tier in your podcast app.
And hit subscribe.
Hey guys, it's Rachel here, back with another Upfront interview. Today I'm delighted to be joined by Bristol City Women's head coach Lauren Smith. It has been a tough season for the Robins, who were relegated back to the Championship on Sunday after only one season in the top flight and winning just one in 20 games so far. Lauren has a long history with the club, so today I'm chatting to her about her feelings on relegation, her plans to bounce back with Bristol City next year, and what Lauren really thinks about closing the resource gap between the top and bottom clubs in the WSL. Well, welcome to the pod, Lauren. Thank you so much for joining us. Gotta ask you how you guys are feeling. Maybe a silly question, but I'm sure our listeners would love to know how you're doing.
Yeah, I mean, you know, it's been something that we've spoken about and been asked about in terms of relegation being on the horizon, I guess, for a few months almost. So it wasn't like something that really crept up on us and shocked us. So I guess there was a bit of time to prepare, although you don't ever want to look it directly in the eye. So we had a couple of days off. Everybody had time to take a moment emotionally and get over it to some extent before we go back in, and we've got a big challenge ahead of us. So I'd say that the group have come back in yesterday, raring to go like they always do. There's no question of that, and that's the brilliant thing about football and this team, that we won't stop for these moments. But yeah, there's a rawness to it, absolutely.
Yeah, I mean, I will say commiserations. Leaving the WSL, we will be sad to see you go. You're a very special club, but hopefully, you know, we'll bounce back. You've obviously got a long relationship with Bristol City. Does it kind of make it hurt more a little bit?
Yeah. Does it hurt more because it's that? I guess it's the support that we've got, you know, and I feel from the club actually probably makes it a softer landing, because I feel that it's been constant in terms of the support from Gavin, the board and the owner, and it's been realistic as well. So it's not like I had to do some sort of weird wizardry and, you know, get into Champions League football, where that was not the realistic ambition. So I think, yeah, it does feel bad. It feels horrible, probably more for our fans that have come out in their thousands. But also it's always about looking forward. And for us, it's just, right, what's the next challenge? How are we going to do that? And what are we going to make sure that the special feeling that we all have around Bristol City stays and we do it again?
When you sit down and debrief with your staff once the season's entirely over, what are going to be some of the main takeaways from this season? Because I think looking in, there are a lot of positives to a lot of the performances that the team put in. And I think maybe, you know, the points don't really reflect the season you've had.
Yeah, and we have to make sure that we learn from this, because we want to do it again and stay up. So we'll be looking at the small margins, I guess, that the games that looked like that and what could we have done better. And I think that's for us to then think about what that squad looks like on the next time it happens, make sure it's shaped in a robust manner, I think, is probably the way I'd want to put that. And that doesn't mean go away from our values and our, ethos of developing players and giving players opportunity when it's deserved. So it's about keeping that and adding maybe a little bit more robustness in some ways so that we can, you know, see out the season. And injuries happen, and weirdly, we've had a strange season of injuries that haven't been for one thing or another. But the seasons before that, we had a really, really good situation with injuries. So I feel like we've ranked them up and just had them all this season, which was not ideal. But that would be one key thing for us to take away. Make sure that we carry on engaging and doing all the things that we really love this year and being part of the community and inspiring Bristol as a city.
You touched on it there about developing young talent, and you know whether people know this or not, I don't know, but Bristol City obviously having the youngest average age of any starting 11 in the WSL, and I think that's something that you can really respect, that you did kind of stick to that ethos and that desire to give young players a chance when they deserve it. You touched on the injuries there, though. I think, you know, you did lose some key experience as well, and I think someone asked you in a press conference before the last game about whether, you know, do you kind of wish if you'd done it all over again and you had those players in, could it have been a different story? I guess it's hindsight is a wonderful thing.
Yeah, and I think when we've had our full squad available and being able to make like substitutions based on how the game is going rather than how the injuries are going, that has given us more fluidity, it's given us more chances, it's given us more goals. So 100%, I think it would look different in terms of our points tally if that was the case. Do I think that we'd be in a different position? I'm not sure about that. We might have just been a bit closer with the gap. But, you know, the thing I need to really highlight is the players have given everything this year. There hasn't been a point where they've wavered or dropped their heads. They just keep going and smashing through the weeks. And I think that's where some of the injuries are coming, because we don't have the ball a lot and they are putting their bodies on the line week in, week out. And, you know, we even had the injury to Brooke, I think it was, before Christmas, because Naomi like went through the back of her defending the goal. So that was, you know, like that's what they were doing. They were just putting their bodies in the way of everything, and they still have been, and that has caused a few bumps and bruises along the way as well.
Yeah, I feel like your performance against Manchester City sort of encapsulates that element of it. Really good first half, you know. That almost chance on goal, really brave from Amelie, really brave goalkeeping, and you end up then losing her for the second half. And it just was kind of like your season, right? Like in a game where you start really well, everyone's being really brave, and then that bravery almost trips you up a bit.
Yeah, it was, and it felt like that actually at halftime. It was like, right, okay, we're here again. We changed Fiona at halftime as well, who's a, you know, outstanding player for us with her pace, a huge threat to most back lines in the league. So that was another adaptation of the story of Sunday that we dealt with.
For you on a personal level as a manager, what have you learned, and I guess what will you take then into the championship next season?
Everything that we did when we were in the championship previously was to get to the WSL and be ready for it, and I probably realistically say perhaps we weren't quite in some of the things you learn when you're here. You know, it was hard for us to put a 45-minute performance together from the start. We were either really good in the first half or really good in the second half. So that'd be something that I think for us as coaches and the sports psych to work on, managing the big moments, the big pressure, but also the when it doesn't go your way and you're 5-0 down against Man City, what that looks like, to be prepared for it. Having now lived it, I think it's always that hindsight situation that we've learned on the job this year, but I wouldn't want to package that away and start fresh next time it happens. The other part is the amount of focus that is needed from everyone on a match day. The players on the pitch, the players coming in, the staff making sure that we are clued on to all of the tactical changes and the moments that are breaking us down. So from that aspect, I've really enjoyed it. It's really challenged me, and I think I've learned and adapted well. But I think that's what we're taking to the championship, right? Is that tactical flexibility and see if we can impose some of the problems that we've encountered this year on teams in the championship and make sure that we're a problem.
And for you, is there anyone you reach out to and get advice from? Are there other managers in the game that you have that pre-existing relationship with and have kind of chatted to throughout the season?
There's been moments, really, and they seem to be after games with a lot of the opposition managers that speak to us afterwards, kind of praise us for how relentless our defending has been, and you know how our counter-attacking is a problem, and that's great. And I think there's been a few that we've spoken to, and you know, to find out really where our weaknesses might be. And it's more like, speaking of support, I think everyone has been on part of the underdog story this year. Yeah, they don't want to lose to us, but they want us to beat everyone else. so yeah, I think there's that side of things. I speak to coaches on a course I'm on that are in the game at the moment, and we have quite a tight-knit group. And then I was on the pro license last year, and like we still have that group. The WhatsApp groups like fill your life, don't they? That group is quite engaging as well, and that's quite a good supportive group, I find. I also had my mentor actually at the Man City game. It just came around that day that was the available day that she could come to, and I was like, well, that's relegation day, so you'll see the best and the worst version of everything that day. So it was nothing you can hide from then. I'm waiting for that feedback.
Yeah, this is when I need the mentor. I'm going to lean on you today.
Yeah.
Other than, I guess, tactically as well, what about that kind of player management, right? Because that's a journey for them mentally as well. And, you know, we talked about it, I think, around Christmas time, about every game being a cup game, right? Like, how do you as a manager manage that kind of feeling in the dressing room?
There's been points where we've had to highlight that as well and say, you know, like, we're coming off the back of losses where we want a reaction, and players need to step up and do that. And I feel like every time we've asked for that reaction, they have given it, and that comes in training and the next performance. As a group, they're pretty close-knitted. They sit together, they change who they sit by, and that's that helps them drive those standards, I think. You know, when we've got tough times, you can see someone that's not themselves. They pick each other up, and they're really, really good at that. And that's helped. But obviously we've had to try and keep a focus and a drive and an ambition. And that's probably been one of the toughest things at times is finding it within yourself. When you're feeling really deflated and am I doing it correct? Do they need something else from me? Like, what can I give here? But equally, they give me that passion and ambition. So I walk in, if I'm having one of those days, I walk in, go and have breakfast or sit with them for a bit, have a coffee, and then I kind of feel it again. And then we go and get the day done. So I lean on them equally as they lean on the staff as well.
Love that. And of course, you signed a new 3-year deal at the start of the season, and the club have been very vocal in plans for next season and the support they have. Does that kind of, when you think about going again and rebuilding for trying to get back into the WSL, you know, Chloe and I have talked about this in the pod about managers getting sacked too early and like being allowed to have that time. How valuable is that for you to kind of go again? You've got players there now who have some WSL experience. You can think long term, you know, you're Bristol through and through. That must be quite nice to be able to kind of visualise a longer term project rather than just thinking, you know, a month or season ahead kind of.
Yeah, and that was what me and the club worked at last year. Was really like we were going into a tough season with all cards laid bare, what it would look like, what the support looks like, what the resource looks like, what their expectations were, and then equally what that was for me. And as one of the key things here is that we stick with our values of doing things a little bit different, ensuring that there's a pathway to our first team, and that's the bit that we do different. We'll make sure that players get first team minutes, whether they stay with us or they're on loan like Brooke. We're part of that journey. So I bought into that a long time ago, and that was the club's, and it's backing for me that we were going into the toughest season with the lowest budget, and they said it doesn't matter, we support you in this. And after that, whatever that looks like, right, we'll try and do whatever we can to support you in staying up. And if that isn't the case, we still we're still very much all in, and I really appreciate that, because this season would have been would have felt a lot different, I think, for me if I was sitting on the last year of my contract.
The championship season is over, and what a season it was.
But the best is yet to come. It's the playoffs.
Who will make it to the Premier League?
And who will be left heartbroken at Wembley?
Stay across it all with the second tier.
We're bringing you episodes after every leg.
And in between, we're revisiting the greatest moments in playoff history.
It's real conversation with two real championship obsessives.
So you can be in the know about everything happening in the playoffs.
And share all your new knowledge in the pub with your mates.
So come join us.
We're your one-stop shop for the playoffs.
Search second tier in your podcast app
and hit subscribe.
Do you think next season, you know, when you're in the championship, you're looking at transfer market, do you prioritise people who've maybe had WSL experience, or what is it that you'd be looking for? What are those little pieces of the puzzle that you'd be looking for?
For me, it's still about having the blend of the two things. So, you know, we've done that well to make sure there's like a mentor-menteeship as well within the group, so that... that players can learn from those experience. And so that's still very, very key. So we want to keep the core group that have had the experience this year to then help with any new players that come in and are part of the journey. But one key thing for the club and for me is to make sure that we don't block any routes to the first team. And if there's a great young player that wants to join us, they need to have that opportunity that the likes of Naomi and Brooke and Mary Ward and et cetera all had. That's made them a success so far. So, you know, we don't want to block any pathways. Equally, that means you still have to work to get to it. It's not an easy route there. And then when you get there, the blend of the two things help people develop in a safe environment. And that's what I want it to look like and want it to feel like. So my challenge is to get that recruitment right so that it looks that way.
But also, like, as a club, what you're offering players as well, you know, we've talked a lot on the pod about your fan base, the fact that you're playing at Ashton Gate, that kind of commitment that you've been able to sustain throughout the season, and that fan base that you've been able to build is also a really attractive prospect for a player, right? It's obviously you've got what you're getting on the pitch and in terms of your coaching and your ambitions and that kind of thing as well. But that's really special, I guess, for a player to come into a club that's so well supported.
Yeah, and it's been so well advertised as well this season. So I think that, you know, people have and players that are potentially looking to come to us will have seen like the amazing crowds and the feel around the stadium and the city on match day. You know, it really comes alive. And yeah, I hope that's one of the selling parts of the club, because it's really special. And when you're sitting outside the top four and having huge numbers of fans, we went on sale with our season tickets, and we've already got we've already beaten the amount of season tickets we had when we were last in the championship. So that smashed out the window straight away. But also, I think it's a quarter of those are already new season ticket holders, so they haven't even done it before and they're coming next year. So for us, it's going to be huge to make sure that what we're doing isn't a yearly thing, that we are building every year. We've got new fans coming, we've got the same vibes, and people love watching us just equally as we love playing for the badge.
Well, there's been some great moments throughout the season here and there. There have been some, you know, key moments, I guess, that didn't go well either. You know, when you think about two games in mid-season where you lost narrowly to Arsenal at home, pushed them close, and then followed it with the 3-2 win over West Ham. Was there a difference in those couple of weeks, or did everything just kind of fall into place in those moments?
I think those were the games where we had the core of the squad available. Or returning from, I think Abby came into the West Ham game and scored, or Brooke did. One of those returned to that game. So I think we had a huge core of the squad available for those moments. And I think that's where I look at it and say it could have been a bit different, because that is what we produced at that point in the season. So that's the bit I take from it. But they were great moments. And obviously the Arsenal one, I think, ignited our... our fan base, if you like, or even the, you know, just in case Bristol City did something a bit special, there was a chance of it that game. And you know, when you play the top four teams, you know there's a real outside chance, but you know, they're games that you just want to do well in and make sure that you're showing off what you can. And I think we did in that Arsenal game, which helped us, and then we got confidence from it that blew into the next game then. So you know, that's how I look at those moments.
Yeah, and there was probably the lowest moment was that Brighton game. I think it's something maybe we don't recognise enough in the top teams is consistency. And I think we're seeing it now with your Liverpools, your Spurs, teams, Leicester's as well, where they'll put in a good performance against a good team and then it's the teams in and around them where they start to struggle. And I guess we maybe don't put enough value on consistency, being able to have all your players playing together week in, week out. That's, I guess, another element to work on, but I guess a difficult element to work on as a team.
Yeah, and I think from how I look at those games is when you're going against the top four, you know you're not going to have much of the ball. You prepare for exactly that game plan, which is really difficult physically, mentally, but in terms of the load and what the game plan looks like, it's probably stripped back. And you know, you just got to be really tough in some key moments, which simplifies it maybe at times, and then you go against the teams around you where you're expected to get something from them. It changes the pressure, which is flips it on its head a little bit. Yes, you're playing against Man City on Sky Sports, and that pressure should be huge. But in everyone else's book, you've already lost that game. Whereas you come up against a Brighton, and that's the one that people want you to win or think you've got a chance in. So the pressure is different, and the problems are different, and it's more complex, I think, when you're playing the teams in and around you. So I think that's the thing again that we'd learn and take into the season when we come back up.
I love that. When we come back up, that's the right attitude. I touched on her earlier, Amelie Thestrup. She's been one of the great successes of this campaign. 9 league goals. Did you imagine when she first arrived last summer that she was going to be banging in quite so many goals?
It was certainly lovely to see. She was someone we looked at for quite a while when we, you know, obviously having a long time in the summer to prep after the championship finish early, and we had a really late start with the WSL. So we spent some time looking at key players, and she was one that we had our eye on, and because she hadn't scored many in the past seasons, and we thought, why is that? Because she's creating and she's getting some really good opportunities, and she was just a player that we thought, yeah, we can help, and we can perhaps be the foundation for her and allow her to play with freedom. And that one absolutely paid off, and she's been brilliant. You know, she's a top professional, she's ambitious, she wants to play for a national team. She got a call up this year and was over the moon with that, and she deserved it as well because of the goals that she's been putting in. So I know it's always hard for strikers when they don't score for maybe seasons, and they think the confidence knock can go for a long time, but she showed this year that she can turn that around, and you know, she's a real threat in the WSL. She's great, and yeah, just so pleased when those goals started going and we looked at each other like, wow, that's great.
There must be a fear though when some of your players start, you know, when people start talking about your players and you're a bit like, okay, don't give them too much notice, because like, you know, there must be a fear of, we want to hang on to them, right?
Absolutely. We want the core of the squad to stay with us and build with us as well. You know, the players that have only been here one season, you know, like your Amy Rogers, Amelie is one of those that have only had a year and they've done really, really well. I want to work with them more and more, and hopefully that's the case. But we know that this crazy season is upon us and people move and moves happen. And, you know, we have to be supportive in any big moves that players deserve. But equally, yeah, absolutely, I want to keep them.
Crystal Palace were, of course, crowned champions of the championship last weekend. Do you think the gap in resources between the championship and the WSL is becoming too big, or is that an unfair interpretation?
I think we have to see on that one. I think the gap of resources is could be less down to the championship and WSL difference, but more where the investment is coming from in terms of Premier League men's football or EFL men's football. And I think that's something that we felt for sure. The the prize money in that competition for the men's teams is incomparable. Obviously, you've got some independent clubs like London City, which who knows what that looks like, and that's quite an exciting thing to watch from outside to see how that changes. But I think it depends on what each club that goes up wants to do and how they see that their women's team. And I think if Palace go up and really mean what they're that they want to take it and stay up there, they have to do that with resource. And then you've got to convince players that you're not going to be the team that goes up and down as well. You've got to attract the best players. And that's not only with money. I think it's about the plan, how you're going to look after them and how you're going to develop them as well. So you've got to have a bit of a package in the lower half of the table. The package has to match and be something that's specific to each player. But I think, yeah, it will change considerably over the next few years, whoever goes up and down and how that looks, what their investment looks like will be different each time. And I think that's what's crazily exciting about the women's game from an out. Like if I was stepping out of Bristol City shoes, then you go, wow, anything can happen here with the investment, with how it's rolling along. Do I want to be part of that? Absolutely.
It's something your chair, Bristol City chair Gavin Marshall, said in a recent article that it's hard to compete in the WSL against, as you touched on, clubs that are backed by men's Premier League money. You know, Bristol being the only team apart from Leicester that doesn't benefit from Premier League funding, though of course Leicester, their men's team, have only been down for one season. I guess how big a factor is that? And then when it comes to things like the spending cap in the WSL, it's 40% of a club's revenue, but that obviously includes revenue from the men's side. You know, is that something that needs to be changed? It's a difficult one to know, like, what the right way of doing it is, right?
Yeah, I think that it's such a hard question to know, because there's always a negative to any kind of solution to it, because you don't want to stop the growth or the money that players and everybody within the club that can earn, because it's almost unfair to some extent to just put a cap on some of those moments for those individuals that are working hard. But at the same time, the gulf is huge when you get in there. And there's something around making sure that it's really competitive to make sure that we continue to grow and it just doesn't become a really split league. And I think when you look at the NWSL, I think it was only 13 points between bottom and top last year. Now that's really competitive, because you know that any game can go anywhere. And not just on the off chance. It's more, you know, I think that's a really big like showcase. Not saying that they have it all completely right either, because I don't think that's the case, but is there learnings that we can take from there and other areas? And I guess that's the excitement part of Newco now. That's the challenge for them, is to try and get this right so that we stay in a competitive, fair, but I don't know, progressive league. So you don't want to stand, no one wants to stand still.
Yeah. It's a hard one. It's like, I know this model doesn't seem to work, but it's working out what the right alternative is, right? And there's talk as well of a recognition fee. I think that was something else that Gavin had touched on off. You know, when you look at some great young players have come through Bristol and are doing so well, and the idea of a recognition fee being clubs getting a fee from those clubs later down the line to kind of recognise that, and then you getting some sort of monetary return on that, I guess. What are your thoughts on that? I don't think the fees are especially big, but no. is it a start?
I think, yeah, it has to be the way that we look at it. You know, if we're going to, which we are, right, we're going to develop players and we want to give opportunities and then they move on, that has to feed the next group for me. So whatever we do, it has to be like a self-funding giant so that we're able to continue and you know, back the reasoning we want to do it. And that has to be with some funding eventually. Yeah, I think we've missed out on a couple of key players moving on before their 18th birthday. And this comes back to the fairness as well, you know, that in the men's game, in the boys' game, that happens from a young age. If someone joins at 9 and then leaves when they're 18, you see a huge amount of money being passed on because of all the work that's gone in. Right now, I think it's, I don't know, $2,500 or something, which is nowhere near what it should be, but also what should it be? It's again, it's those questions. What should it look like? But I think putting a cap on it, but even making it at the point where you have to be 18 to be able to get a transfer fee for a player when you can move at 16. So, or before that, like, it doesn't quite fit. All of the parts now don't seem to fit together. If, you know, in terms of player movement, in terms of supporting the next generation. And I think that's the big challenge for us, and to make sure that we're still knocking on the door of all the big decisions now, instead of them being all kind of the ones at the top. It's about, you know, what if this happens? Do we get a fee for that when somebody leaves to go and be a brilliant footballer for Man City and then wins a Euros? We've been part of that journey, and I think that's where now, because there's so much money in the women's game, we need to be sharing that out to some extent.
Yeah, and I guess as well, we say there's a lot in the women's game. Just because it's done one way in the men's game doesn't mean it has to be the exact same in the women's game. So if that's, you know, changing things slightly to benefit clubs more around, it should be done. What is next on your to-do list for the summer? What will it take for Bristol City to rebuild and come back to the WSL? Because the Championship's not an easy league.
Yeah, and that's a big challenge, is to make sure that we can do what we say we do. We've got to bring some players in to make sure that there's opportunity. So there'll be some level of recruitment going on. We've got to make sure that pre-season is right, which is less challenging this year, with the World Cup not there and the Olympics not happening for some countries. I think that gives us a huge option for pre-season to be a real builder into the season. It's going to be, as always, a busy summer, but I think this one, there might be a time for some switch off, whereas last year did not feel like that. I feel like we rolled straight into one and into the other, even though there was a huge gap between. It was a busy time.
And of course, you have your penultimate game at the weekend against Chelsea, no less. Mm-hmm. a big ask, but you're coming up against Emma Hayes, who's obviously achieved so much in the WSL. What are your thoughts on her legacy?
Well, I mean, she's written it, hasn't she? She's changed the game. She's been she's challenged the way we've started to do things. She always wants the best for her teams, and she's done incredible things with Chelsea, and I'm sure she's gutted to be moving on in some sense. And it's a difficult one for her, but, you know, you've got to praise the work and how the game has changed since she took over at Chelsea, and how she's leaving it, you know, is a great, like you say, legacy to be leaving, and a big challenge for the next people in those shoes, because, you know, she's a Chelsea legend now.
I guess looking forward to that game, does it feel a little bit like maybe the shackles are off a little bit and there's less pressure on the team? They can just go out and enjoy themselves?
I don't know, really. I'm not sure. Yes, I guess we're not fighting against what it looks like and what other teams are doing around us, but the team aren't going to want to let down what they've done all season and shown that they can fight and compete and work hard. So that's not really going to change, I don't think. I really hope not, anyway. And it's going to feel hard, but training yesterday and just about to go out there again today, everyone wants to be in that starting shirt again. So nothing's changed in terms of that. And I think yesterday's result throws things up in the air. You know, it's a talking point this morning of how mad that game was last night between Liverpool and Chelsea. So, that always makes it interesting.
Well, best of luck. It's been great talking to you, and best of luck in the Championship next season. I know Bristol is the kind of club that's made its way into many people's hearts wherever your allegiances lie. I think we all hoped for a fairy tale ending, but we'll certainly be keeping an eye on you next season, and we appreciate you coming in to chat to us.
Thank you very much.
Thank you so much for listening. We are both back on Monday. In the meantime, you can find us on Instagram and X. Chloe is at morgie_89. I'm at Girls in the Ball, and we are at upfront_pod. You can also find us on YouTube at upfrontpod. See you next week.
Upfront is a Stack production. and part of the Acast Creator Network.
Even on a budget, quality is non-negotiable. That's why Quince is the place to score high-end essentials at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Get your hands on buttery soft cashmere sweaters from just $60, Italian leather jackets, and so much more. And the best part about Quince? They exclusively partner with factories committed to safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Elevate your style without the elevated price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
The championship season is over, and what a season it was.
But the best is yet to come. It's the playoffs.
Who will make it to the Premier League?
And who will be left heartbroken at Wembley?
Stay across it all with the second tier.
We're bringing you episodes after every leg.
And in between, we're revisiting the greatest moments in playoff history.
It's real conversation with two real championship obsessives.
So you can be in the know about everything happening in the playoffs.
And share all your new knowledge in the pub with your mates.
So come join us.
We're your one-stop shop for the playoffs.
Search second tier in your podcast app
and hit subscribe.